dear friends, don't go by the information that he gave you. I try to be and happen to be a devoted servant to the cause for which the Divine Trinity took the trouble of being formed, being born as a human, and left an indelible mark on human psyche about, say, 100 to 150 years ago. I try to be a worthy servant of that cause. I feel that introduction satisfies me most. Anyway, dears, the second thing I'd like to tell you is, though I address you as my very dear friends, but the best identity for ourselves is we are the children of the divine. That is our real true identity. Somehow or other, down the line, we have forgotten that. Not only we have forgotten that, and we don't ask her, who are we? We are convinced that we are something that we are not. We are a very frail human, full of faults and foibles and frivolities, and we are happy with it. The purpose of this small group informal meeting is to remind ourselves our true original nature. And there are three different levels of that awareness, which is a matter of natural evolutionary growth. From biological point of view, we are the most evolved biological creature on this earth. We call ourselves human, and we identify ourselves with this body-mind complex. That is why it's but very natural, common. Then anybody asks me, who are you? I quietly hand over my passport to him. You better look into it. That is my identity. And if the questioner is a little more inquisitive, I hand a long list of my biodata and activity and curricular vitae. My identity ends there. But unfortunately, according to the teachings of India's spiritual culture, why only India's? All spiritual culture that is prevalent in human society all over the globe, all of those denominations try to highlight your true identity. And how do they highlight? Some ideas say that you are born with a purpose. What is that purpose? You convert yourself into a devoted, dedicated, determined master, a servant of the master. Khuda ka banda. That is, you convert your egoistic, independent attitude and try to merge your egoistic movement with the will of the Lord so that you are there, your ego is there, but your ego is in the hands of the Lord. That is, you convert yourself with all your faculties as a servant of the divine, and a real servant, he lives because to serve his master and act according to the master's will. That is known as dualism. I am, the world is, and I have a master. The creator, the ruler, the preserver of this cosmos. He is, I am, and it is a sacrilege to think I am the divine, therefore let me maintain my amness, separateness, but emotionally and rationally I convince myself and involve myself with the awareness of presence of the Lord God of the universe, and I hand myself over to him. So what happens is, I am and he is, and I understand that rationally and intellectually with an absolute rock-solid conviction. And after that understanding, I emotionally dedicate and devote myself to his will. The next level of awareness is, all of us think so. There's not a single existing human being who doesn't have that concept of I am, I exist. The sum total of that amness. So one amness, one existence, it is manifesting through infinite avenues and channels. So in ultimate analysis, I am qualitatively the same, quantitatively I am separate. By way of example, a ripple in a water or a wave in a water is known as a ripple or a wave because it has a form and a size and a type, from a ripple to the tsunami. They have a different name, different form, different effect. But if you develop a little insight, you will see it is essentially the water known as a ripple, a wave, a breaker, or a tsunami. What is happening? You have rationally convinced yourself the oneness of the universe, but at the same time, you are aware of the diversity in this whole cosmos. Behind that diversity, there is an eternal spirit. I have rationally understood it. As for another example given in the scriptures are, and another example given in the scripture is, this is the one, the second, is, say for instance, you all know the forest fire. Magnitudinally, quantitatively, the forest fire is so strong that it can burn out a habitation in a twinkling of an eye. Whereas the sparks coming out from burning timber has the capacity to make a hole in your shirt sleeve. Qualitatively, both are fires. One is infinitely small quantitatively, and one is infinitely large. But the awareness of oneness of the fire is paramount in your understanding. So the concept of duality evolves into concept of qualified monism, qualified oneness. The fire qualitatively is a fire in the spark of fire, and the fire qualitatively is the fire in a forest fire, which can burn down a habitation in a fraction of a minute. You have educated yourself to focus your attention to the oneness of the two, the diversity is there, but the diversity does not blind you. You are aware of the essence, the unity, which is hidden up and covered up by diversity. And what is the diversity? Let us analyze from a robust common sense. I have a name, you have a name. These two names gives us an idea of separateness. You have a shape, size, and a form, and an appearance. I have a separate one. So the concept of name gives us an idea of separateness. And that separateness is reinforced by the concept of the form, the size, shape, and the appearance of the object. Third is, each one has a personality trait, a basket full of qualities. One is very harsh, the other is very soft. One is very intelligent, the other is rather dull. That gives a sense of separateness. And the fourth is utilitarian value in life. You are a lawyer, he's a doctor. He's an accountant and he's an engineer. Utilitarian value of that individual in the society. That is a cause of sense of differentness, sense of diversity. So if you look into it properly, you will be convinced that this sense of diversity standing on these four pillars, name, form, qualities, and utilitarian value. In Sanskrit language, it is nama, rupa, guna, and artha kriya karitya, utilitarian value in society. But that makes the difference. But there's one concept. We are all humans. The concept of we are all humans is permeating and pervading everywhere. Oneness. Oneness behind diversity or behind appearance. So India's spiritual science teaches you how to reinvent yourself. All of us, honestly speaking, we identify ourselves with this mechanism. All of us. And because of that limited identification, we have our ego problems. I and you. And I am always better than you. Holier than you. So, we slowly and slowly deviate from the concept of oneness that we are humans. We get stuck into the concept we are humans, but we are different. So the humanness is reduced to a secondary understanding. The primary understanding is myself. Scriptures of all different denominations teaches you there are three different levels of awareness. Awareness expressing in understanding, in rock solid conviction. What is that awareness? I am the divine, in ultimate analysis. I am the essence of this cosmos, what I call as I am the amness, and I am aware, I am awareness. Satta is isness, and awareness of my isness, I am aware, I am, I exist, is awareness, chetana. So Satta and Chetana, they are available in my level of awareness spontaneously. And we are told by whom? By those people who have identified themselves, lifting their identity from this body-mind complex into the identity of eternal existence and awareness. They say, when you reach that level of awareness, there is an indescribable, ecstatic, divine joy. Ananda Swarupata. That is your true original nature. I am aware I am, but down the line, my awareness of my amness has confined itself to something which is not my true original nature. But the hold of that ignorance of my true original nature is so complete with me that even if God comes and tells me today, you are not what you think yourself to be, you are a part and parcel of my being, my existence, I will politely say, sir, you are a very busy person. You have to manage the whole cosmos. You better let me alone with my conviction. I am Swami Sridharananda. This is where we stand today. All of us, that somehow or other we have forgotten our true original nature. The question then is it possible to rehabilitate ourselves in our lost glory? This is where, dear, the spiritual science comes in. There are two aspects of learning and knowing. One is material science and the culture and education and civilization. All is related to demystifying the forces of mysteries of nature. And that's what the human society is doing. In a breakneck speed, it is demystifying the mysteries of nature. And what is the end result? The end result, if applied properly, makes our life and living more convenient and comfortable. Air travel, we'll have space travel a little later, telecommunication, and etc., 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 which enriches our day-to-day life. That is the aspect of material science and its utility. In short, it helps you to improve the convenience and comfort of life and living. And that's an education, an indispensable method of self-education. We go to schools, to colleges, to universities and higher studies oriented towards this goal, that we do something which will make my life and living more convenient, more comfortable, more enjoyable. But there is another aspect of learning and knowing. which, as I tell you, somehow or other is forgotten or is hidden in the background. What is that? Right from our childhood, through all denominations, don't think it's only Hinduism, all denominations, the parents take up the responsibility to tell their children, be good, do good, see good. The more you culture and cultivate goodness, you will become good. Moral education. What does it mean? It means a human personality, for the sake of this discussion hypothetically, manifests four positive faculties of human being: rationality, emotionality, ingenuity, and indomitable willpower. And we try to hide it, but let us be honest to ourselves, let us be very clear and clean in our understanding. We also have six propensities, which sometimes makes us behave not as a human, but a lesser specimen of a human being. We behave like beasts, we behave like animals. You can't deny that. However high and mighty you may be, you are a victim of anger. And when you are a victim of anger, when that propensity known as anger has a hold on you, the first casualty is your sense of propriety. Do and don't disappear. You do things which you are ashamed of later on. Similarly, greed. Similarly, vanity, pride, arrogance, and all the six. So, for the purposes of this philosophical analysis, let us say we human beings have four positive qualities and six negative propensities. And those six negative propensities, somehow or other, do not outgrow our misconceived identity that I am this body-mind complex. They not only cannot outgrow that, they hold you back to that level of thinking. Not so pleasant human being. Whereas your rationality, your emotionality, and your ingenuity and indomitable willpower has the capacity to break open the blind windows and doors, which does not allow light to enter in your understanding. These four faculties do have the capacity to bring an openness in your understanding. So the teachers of spiritual sciences, it is as much a science as material science. Because material sciences say we are real, you are superstitions. Why? Because whatever the fundamental scientists claim to be true, we have a multi-billion-dollar laboratory to prove it and give it to you on a platter to be enjoyed by your five sense organs. You can hear, you can see, you can smell, you can touch, and you can taste. Any of the five avenues can be utilized to give it a sense of reality. You speak of God, you speak of soul, you speak of Atman. Can you demonstrate it? It cannot be. Because there are two branches of learning. One is material sciences, the other is spiritual science. What does that spiritual science do? They take hold of the whole human being as it is, steeped in ignorance, steeped in, therefore, misconception. Misconception of who am I, what am I. The teachers of the spiritual science, they transform their personality and their being into a testing laboratory. And by a process of being and becoming, the normal process of evolution, what you think, so you become. It is not my word, it's an ancient adage in English language. You think good, you be good, you will be good. You think bad, you behave badly, you will be bad, ugly. That is what is being said. And it's an adage. What you think, so you become. So the catch here is, why don't I educate myself, or let me use the word, why don't I re-educate myself, by means of which I try to rehabilitate myself in my lost identity. Some aspect of denominal sciences say man is made in the image of God. Purpose of life is to follow the voice of God, the conscience in a human being, so that you can meet your Maker in heaven and enjoy eternal peace in paradise. The promised land is eternal peace in paradise. And Hindu scriptures say, jivanamukti sukha prapti hetave janmadharanam. The purpose of being born as a human, the most advanced of all biological creatures, the purpose is to enjoy the pleasure of being one with God by breaking open all your shackles. You are breaking shackles with your four faculties. Look at it the way you are mastering the mysteries of nature and utilizing it for betterment of quality of life. Don't say you don't break your shackles. When it comes to breaking the shackles of ignorance and bondage in yourself, you go blank. How do you justify the misuse of your talents? How do you justify this partiality of your thinking that I'll break the mysteries of nature, but I will not break the hold of ignorance that misidentifies me with what I am not? How do you justify that, you rational people? So the distinction between material science and spiritual science is there. In spiritual science, your personality is the laboratory, is the testing ground of your ability to rehabilitate yourself in your lost glory. And how do you do that? After all, the time is short. We have to concise. It will be only an exchange of ideas. I tickle your brain and you put your thinking hats on and you find out for yourself what is it all about. It is about a qualitative improvement of human personality to such an extent that it doesn't rotate in a circle. It is a teleological, straightforward direction where you manifest the divinity which is already within you. That means your personality, your being, your antakarana, the inner organ, the mind, is now to be directed in such a direction that I slowly and slowly cultivate, according to Swamiji's language, cultivate those man-making, character-building ideas which educates myself, and it ends up in improvement of quality of my personality, and the end goal is manifesting the divine which is already within me, of which I am aware as I am, but I have no intention or inclination to identify who that I am is. This is where we stand today, that I am aware I am, but I do not know what is my real, true, original nature. Let us stop here for a while. Let us now again try to disabuse ourselves of certain woolly-headed ideas about spirituality. What is that? As soon as the word spiritual life, spiritual discipline, spiritual endeavor comes into play, we shut ourselves off. And every stupid, willy-headed, wishy-washy ideas fills up that vacuum. Let us demystify that. What is education, dear? What is education? I knew nothing about geometry. I was only told there's a subject known as geometry. And I was asked to join my geometry lesson classes. I went with an absolute blank slate. A clean slate, a blank paper. And I sit there and I listen to my teacher. Whatever he's saying, I'm absorbing through my audio nerves and converting through my brain into ideas. What I see on the board scribbled by him, I see with my visual nerves, and I again convert them into ideas with the help of my brain, and I try to hold on to it. I try to hook myself up, latch myself up with those ideas, and allow myself those ideas to seep into me. And he, knowing full well where he is going, how he will go, bringing himself down to the level of the student, guide you by the nose ring. A mighty bull is guided by a child with the nose ring. He guides you that way. And at the end of it, you nod and say, yes, I am now convinced. The way my professor proved, two sides of a triangle is greater than the third side. Your process of education, self-education, with the help of that teacher, is complete. You can't deny that. You hear, you see, you collate, coordinate, and you hold on to that idea so that it has time to seep in your being. And you're transformed and you say, yes, sir, I agree. It is two sides of a triangle greater than the third. Your education is complete for that purpose. And who is your teacher? He was also a student at one point of time. and by his diligence he has excelled. And you love him as a teacher. Oh, he's a wonderful teacher. Why? He speaks in a language which I very well understand. Now let us come back to the exemplified. That's an example. There are people under the sun who started their journey from where we are. I am aware I am, but I do not know who am I. That ignorance of knowing creates a void, and all woolly-headed ideas fill that up. And I identify myself with what I am not. As simple as that. And what is spiritual education? To disabuse yourself of this erroneous concept. To get rid of this error of judgment. How do you go about it? Every religion, every denomination gives you a list of do's and don'ts. Positively and negatively. Whether it is a Sermon on the Mount, whether it is the Ten Commandments of God given to Moses, whether it is do's and don'ts in Islamic culture, whether it is the Hindu ethics of morals and immorals, whether it is Ashtashila Marga of the Buddhists, they give you a well-laid pattern of what thinking pattern, emotional pattern, the play of your ingenuity and a determined willpower. You have those? It's not that you have been asked to cultivate them which are not with you. They are with you. So the spiritual teachers, they live a life. They emanate the wisdom of finding their own soul through their behavior pattern, through their teachings. What does teaching mean? Your rationality is being made use of. And until and unless you develop an emotional involvement, you can't saturate yourself. The brain and the heart, the head and heart must join hands together to flow. Jnana and Bhakti join their hand together and it flows. Now the point is, well, all these instructions were given thousands of years ago. The world has changed so much, those do's and don'ts and rituals can't fit in the modern day. And we all agree. To live in the hills and the forests and always meditating and contemplating and all that is no more possible. Because right from my childhood, I am told you have duties to perform, you have responsibilities to fulfill, you have your obligations to be paid, and if there's some time left, you have time for your hobbies. And you are busy. You have no time. So where do I go from here? That is why, dear, to reach that level of finding out your lost identity, the divine trinity incarnated in the modern age told you how to convert your flow of life into an endless reverential interaction with the awareness of presence of the divine every moment of your life. the concept of karma yoga, contrary to the concept of karma bhoga. Spiritual practice, spiritual path for a modern man who is involved in his flow of life from which he cannot come out. This is the excellence of spiritual genius. You know, in English language, a person is called a genius because he is born and brought up in a particular tradition. As for instance, Galileo and Newton. Newton and Einstein. What is the difference? Einstein was born and brought up in Newtonian concepts of gravitation and etc. He absorbed all that and added a new dimension of relativity. And we call him a genius. So to define a genius from this example is, a genius is a person who is born and brought up in ancient traditions and values. And with his ingenuity, he develops a methodology which fits in with the flow of life of the modern time. That is why he is a genius. And that genius came from his ingenuity. So let us hear now what is Vedantic principles put into practice in your day-to-day life, where you don't need to run away from life, don't need to be a defeatist, don't need to be an escapist. Be brave. Face your life with all your duties, responsibilities, commitments, your obligations and your hobbies. All that you need is to manage the way you think about it. So let me go ahead. I hope I'm not delaying you, Swami.
No, they can perhaps ask Pardon? Questions.
Pardon?
They would like to ask, they may...
But I'd rather put it in such a manner there will be no questions left.
That's one way to Pardon check whether me. They have understood or not. Let them ask
Pardon
questions.
Me. Let them put their thinking hats on and have sleepless nights. So what happens? There are two words. Work and worship. All of us know what is work and what is worship. For the purposes of discussion, let us analyze what is work. I am, as of now, I'm physically involved. I'm making gestures and postures, movement of my body. I'm making use of my lips and my tongue and my vocal cord. I'm physically involved. I am emotionally involved. I would like to convey certain ideas to you which is new to you or may not be new to you, will be helpful to you. That is my emotional involvement. What is my rational involvement? I'm trying to choose the right word in the right time to put into your brain an idea which I want to be conveyed, nothing else. So, work means I am rationally convinced, involved, emotionally involved, and I am physically involved, and most importantly, I am egoistically involved. My involvement in my day-to-day flow of life, known as work and activity, involves these four concepts: rational involvement, emotional involvement, physical involvement, motivated by egoistic desires. that it worked for you for the purpose of this hypothesis. What is worship for you? You go to a place known as place of worship. There, according to the traditions of the denomination to which you belong, either you fall flat on your face and you rationally imagine that the Supreme Being is being symbolized by that symbol, whether it's a crescent moon or a star, whether it is Star of David, whether it is Omkara, whether it is whatever it may be, a cross. Rationally, you are convincing yourself the presence of the divine in the place of worship. And you undergo physical activity, emotional involvement, rational involvement. And you are egoistically active, but you cannot avoid the awareness of presence of God. That makes all the difference. Highest common factor is the four equals. Physical involvement, emotional involvement, rational involvement, egoistic involvement. In worship, the additional involvement is you try to be aware of presence of God there, and immediately known as worship. So awareness of presence of God is the differentiating factor between the concept of work and concept of worship. If I'm wrong, please kindly correct me. That is the difference between what is work, what is worship. Now, there's no denomination religion which does not say the whole world is created by the divine and the divine has saturated his creation by his being. All religions say the same thing. In different language, different metaphors, different similes or symbols. But the main theme is tatsrishtva tadeva anupravishat. Having created this universe, he saturated the whole universe by his being. What does it mean, dear? It means there's not a speck of space or an iota of time where God is not. He's omnipotent, he's omnipresent, he's omniscient. So can you point out a place where God is not? He's ever present, omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient. So Swami says, why don't you have a little correction of your attitude, an attitudinal correction? What is that attitudinal correction? That you are egoistically involved. Along with it, my dears, why don't you cultivate the awareness of presence all the time of your life? He is and I am. I am, he is. Don't forget that he is. And be a pursuer of perfection, pursuer of thoroughness, correctness, pursuer of excellence. And carry on with the commitments of your life in the most perfect manner that you can. And offer it to God, sir. You are everywhere. You know everything. You see everything. You hear everything. You understand everything. Kindly understand me. I am unable to go to the rituals that have been mentioned before. I am a busy man. I am converting my concept of work into an endless worship of the divine, constant awareness of his presence. And as you do not offer bad things to God, dirty things, ugly things to God, you try to give of your very best. Let your effort be at your very best. With that effortfulness, you offer yourself to God. The concept of work here, concept of worship, work and worship. Slowly and slowly, work merges with the concept of worship. Work is worship, and thereafter, the concept of work totally disappears. Life is an endless worship. Why? You are endlessly, relentlessly, uninterruptedly aware of the presence of the divine every moment of your life. That is why, to conclude, Swami Vivekananda said two things relevant to this talk. What is that? Each soul is potentially divine. The purpose of life and exposure to this new education is to manifest that divinity already within yourself. Do it by jnana, do it by karma, do it by bhakti, or do it by yoga. For heaven's sake, do and be free. That is the end all and be all of spiritual education. Thank you, dear friends. Thank you.